Hi, my name's Leo Carroll. I am the host of the podcast, The Autistic Entrepreneur. It's very nice to have you here. And today I'm joined by my friend Ross, who's going to ask me a range of questions, in particular about myself and also about what the podcast is actually going to be about.
Excellently. I just wanted to touch on, as a first question, why exactly did you want to start the podcast?
I think that there's a real need to talk openly about neurodiversity and the challenges that neurodiversity and mental health have, both in the workplace and for families. I think, you know, mental health and neurodiversity is complex, and I think the more we talk about it openly, the more of a positive impact we're going to have for people around the world.
And what exactly has made you have such an interest in SAME?
Well, I've got twin girls, both 16. They were through IVF. We got lucky the fourth time with IVF. So one of my twin girls, Kate, is high functioning autistic. So that brings its own challenges from an education point of view and obviously from a home life point of view. I've got a younger daughter who arrived by accident 2 years later, and she's ADHD. And I was diagnosed myself with high functioning autism around about 9 or 10 years ago. So I'm pretty familiar with it, both personally at home and also within the workplace as well, which is something I'm keen to also talk about, is how it affects the workplace and businesses.
Excellent. And could you give us a bit of a background on your personal life, your personal background?
Yeah. My dad's from North Kerry. I'm obviously the name like O'Carroll. I've got a lot of roots and heritage in Ireland. I lived in Ireland for best part of 20 years. I was lucky enough to live in Howth on the coast there, just outside of Dublin. I lived in the city centre as well, and I'm very familiar with Ireland. I now live across from Liverpool in a place called the Wirral. I'm a big LFC fan, just in case you wanted to know. And I've got three teenage girls that are challenging, and I'm sure I'm challenging for them. I've got a lovely wife. I punch above my weight there. She's lovely. And I've got a beautiful dog called Emma, who I love more than life itself. She's a golden Labrador.
Beautiful. And what about your professional background? What kind of got you to where you are today? And could you tell us a little bit about your journey in that?
Sure. I'm a submariner for the first 7 years of my life. So I spent 7 years underneath the water in a big metal tube. And that was a great crack. I got to see lots of places and drank too much and actually smoked too much and probably swore too much as well. But that was a great time. It just wasn't for me. So I left after about 7 or 8 years. Went into the family business, which is jewelry and pawnbroking. Did that for a couple of years. That kind of broke my heart because families don't always treat each other well in business. So I left, moved to the Wirral, which is where my wife's from, in Merseyside, and I started my own business in telecoms. And I've been doing that I've been self-employed for about 25, 30 years, technology and all sorts of business experience, from startup, 5 or 6 people, up to 350 people. So yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Excellent. And how would you kind of best describe your personality?
I think you best ask my friends, but what would my friends say? And my enemies? Let's say I was direct, cheeky, challenger. I like to debate. I suppose I don't suffer fools lightly, but that's a broad statement. I like to learn. I'm very open, you know, and I think that's part of maybe the autism. I'm not too sure whether I'd be like that anyway, but I'm very open, very direct, very candid. Call a spade, love shooting the shit, love having the crack, very dry sense of humor. Yeah, that's probably what I'm like. And I'm very kind. So yeah, there you go.
I know that. What makes a good employer? What do you feel from your personal experience in your profession? What do you think makes a good employer?
I'll probably have to kind of change the question slightly. I'm sorry, but I think it's what makes a good workplace culture, because an employer, really, the business is the employer. That's the vehicle. And people inside the vehicle are the culture. So, you know, you can't really control the vehicle. It's a machine. It's supposed to generate sales, generate revenue, and give people enough room to develop. And so the business itself, the workplace culture is really what's important. And I think it's a real tough question to answer, but I think the biggest problems facing most businesses today are that there's not enough openness. There's not enough appreciation of individuality. There's too much micromanagement. And I don't think people in positions of responsibility, such as executive teams or C-suite teams or management teams, I don't think they're given the right tools to develop their own teams. I think to wrap the question up, I believe as a leader that the most important thing you can do is to make people better when they leave than when they join a business. Your job is to improve people. And if you do that, then naturally your business will improve as well. So
100%.
Workplace culture, it's a big thing.
100%. And have you had any experience with dealing with maybe bad management that you've just referenced there, or micromanagement? And how was that, you know, in regards to neurodiversity and working in an environment like that? How did you cope?
I mean, I'm not going to go too much into detail about my actual work history, you know, because there's obviously a lot of people involved in that. You know, I don't want to be openly saying that I question certain people's managerial skill sets, but I have worked in environments where there've been some narcissism and some challenges with regard to how people are treated. I think the role I always took, I was lucky enough to be a senior person within a business from the word go, because I've always been self-employed. So I've always been a decision maker. But I've always been the guy that greases the wheels and sees how not to do things and sees how people should be treated. So when I identified any problems, and even if I do today, I will step in and try and realign the issue so that good comes out of it and the business learns from it. Neurodiversity in a business is a real challenge. I don't think it's a challenge particularly to UK businesses or Irish businesses. I think it's a global challenge. I think the US are maybe a couple of years ahead of the rest of the world. But if we took a random vote and asked, you know, 200,000 businesses in Ireland or 5 million businesses in the UK, ask them to all produce a neurodiversity mandate or manifesto, I'd be surprised if 5% had one right now. And I think that's something we need to change because it's important.
And just to get a little bit more personal, what exactly do you feel is your purpose in life?
Well, I've got a family and I need to support them. I love them dearly. I probably love my dog a bit more, but that's beside the point. But yeah, I think obviously, like any person, I have my responsibilities to those that I love and that are closest to me. I think that's obviously a core responsibility. Outside of that, if, you know, I... probably sounds a bit cheesy and, you know, a bit corny, but I think I just like helping people. That's why I've started this podcast, because I think I've got experiences and knowledge. I'm 56 now, so I can share that experience and that knowledge, and, you know, I think it will help other people. I like helping people. That's the bottom line.
Excellent. And what do you plan to achieve with the podcast as such? What would you like the listeners to take away, if they could take away something?
That it's okay. It's okay to not be okay, which is probably one of my favorite sayings, really, that I don't know who came up with it, but I think it's pretty good. It's okay not to be okay. You know, none of us are perfect. None of us have got everything worked out, you know, and I think the more we talk about that, the more we get it on the table, the more we're honest about the challenges that we all face as people, whether you've got neurodiversity or whether you just feel low, anxious, whether you feel as though you've lacked some confidence, whether you don't know what to do with career choices, whatever it is. I think, you know, I'd love for the podcast just to openly talk about stuff, shoot the shit, just, you know, have a bit of crack and say, well, look, you know, this is what I did in that situation, or tell me what happened when you did that situation. And, you know, yeah, I just want to hopefully achieve a more open environment where people have a place to learn some stuff from, really.
Excellent answer. And what do you feel kind of on a personal level has been one of the challenges you've had to face with neurodiversity? How has it impacted your life? How has it changed how you live? Maybe that's being a father, maybe that's being an entrepreneur, but how do you feel your life has changed living with neurodiversity?
Well, for the first 45 years, or let's say 30 years, from the years I was an adult, the first 30 years of being an adult, I didn't know what neurodiversity was. And I did go through certain stages of social anxiety and depression, which I can still suffer from, the depression side, not the social anxiety. But I think my early adult years, I certainly questioned why I did things and why I said things the way I did, why I felt uncomfortable in social circumstances, why I was direct, why I was too black and white, why I didn't have enough friends. So I think there were the challenges. I didn't recognize any of the positives. As I was diagnosed, and obviously with the, you know, the availability of Google and the world's knowledge at your fingertips, I started to research neurodiversity and research what autism was and how it would affect me, and realized that most of the feelings and the emotions that I carried with me were natural, and they were supposed to be there because of neurodiversity. And then I started to appreciate the benefits, because there are benefits to it, I find, on a personal level. You know, I think I see things differently. I get to a solution very quickly. I've got a wonderful memory, long-term memory. And I appreciate that I'm direct and candid, because it's really helped me professionally as to be a leader, where people know that if they come and ask me a question, they'll get a direct answer that is genuine and honest. And that's been something that's been great. But to round that answer up, until I got diagnosed, I didn't really know what the hell I was about, and it was a real challenge. Once I knew what I was about, then I set about learning about the condition and starting to appreciate and control it. So swings and roundabouts, I think, would be my open answer, you know.
And is there anything that comes to mind in regards to things that helped you cope and helped you through that journey that you could maybe share with listeners and they could take away?
Well, I think knowledge. It's an obvious answer, but it's a truthful one. Knowledge. So take the time to learn about why you feel the way you feel. Accept that if you do have neurodiversity, or you do have some form of mental health issue, or you do have anxiety, or, you know, you feel as though you're a bit unworthy, or imposter syndrome, to try and own them, and to try and treat them as they're a third party. Talk to them, recognize when they're about, and challenge them when they do appear. And that's one of the coping mechanisms that I'm trying to teach my 14-year-old at the moment, is that she needs to build up a mental shield where she recognizes when these thoughts, when these feelings and emotions come into her, and she learns to recognize them and talk to them and start to own them and boss them about and almost be dismissive of them. It's worked for me. Exercise didn't really work for me. Cognitive therapy didn't work for me. I think I'm too complex as a person. But self-help and learning, and that knowledge empowering me to control and see things for what they were, has really helped me. And that would be the advice I would give people.
Excellent. And kind of more back to business then. What do you believe is the true value of money?
bit of a killer question. It has true values represented by what people value, the value it can give. I personally believe, you know, I'm not a socialist, I'm not really politically motivated, but I think there is too much wealth. I don't feel comfortable with, you know, 5% of the world owning 80% of the value. You know, I don't blame people for being hugely successful. I think that's a wonderful achievement. But I think it's disproportionate. You know, I struggle to understand why I can walk over people in the street that are homeless as I'm walking to McDonald's or I walk to a restaurant. I find it hard to understand how that can be possible. You know, it's 2024. It's not 1724. We've got intelligence. We've got ability. We've got the money. We've got the resource. What we don't have is the ambition and the single-mindedness to change things. And that's a big problem, I think. So money, I don't think is of a particular interest to many people. It's certainly not of an interest to where we need to go. I think we need to be more sympathetic and more caring for those that need immediate help. And that's really where I think the power lies. You know, money doesn't change things. Action changes things. Money is just a resource that enables wheels to turn faster. Action is what makes the wheel turn in the first place.
Excellent answer. And a final question then, Lee, just to wrap up the introduction episode that we've done here now for the Autistic Entrepreneur, would be, what would you say to somebody who's interested or thinking about starting up a business?
Probably three or four things. What is it that you want to sell? If you don't sell something, you don't have a business. Who wants to buy it? So who's your audience? And you've got to be detailed about that answer. Don't just say it's people between the ages of 20 and 60 and they're men. You've got to be very specific and very granular about that market. You've got to answer why people should buy it from you and not other people, because there's not many products in the world that are new. Most products are just, you know, shiny old ones. And then you've got to do the usual stuff, which is your finances, understanding what it takes to sell one thing and to pay for your bills and pay for your costs. But ultimately, you know, what is it you want to sell? Who are you going to sell it to? And why do they want to buy it? And why should they buy it from you? Those four things. If you've got to answer them, or if you've got gaps in those answers, then you shouldn't start your business until you can answer them properly.
Excellent. And if somebody's lacking confidence in that area and they just don't feel that they will succeed, what were maybe elements that helped you along the way in being a self-employed entrepreneur?
Somebody said to me once that try and make every decision like you're 18 years of age. And I've never forgotten that. I didn't start in business till I was 28. But I understood what it meant and I still understand it now. Is we all of us have an inner voice. We all have an instinct and it gets stronger as you get older. Because ultimately that instinct is coming from experience. More often than not, subconscious experience, which is why we call it an instinct. But you've got to listen to it. If something feels right, it generally is right. And in business, try and make the decisions based on what you feel are right. If you feel something right, do it. But if you feel it's wrong, absolutely do not do it. And just remember that running a business is like bringing up a child. You've got to educate it. Feed it, keep it warm. You've got to discipline it. You've got to watch it grow. You've got to let it go so it falls over. You've got to be there to pick it up. You've got to keep it safe. But also you've got to let it be challenged and stand on its own two feet. And that's what a business is. It takes that commitment and dedication. And it generally is what sets people apart. successful business people understand the level of commitment that's required to grow a business. So yeah, that's all I can say there.
Excellent answer. Thank you for taking your time to answer these questions for the listeners. Welcome to the Artistic Entrepreneur Podcast, a brand new podcast that's been created to share information and spread awareness around neurodiversity, and then equally also people that are in business and may want to pick Lee's brain. You can find this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, and across the board. We thank you all for listening, and we hope to hear from you soon.